so that he could smell my hand and smell that it was me. And someone said, "Get out of there, for fuck's sake!" And I looked up, and it was a man who was wearing a green raincoat, and he had black shoes, and his socks were showing, and they were grey with little diamond patterns on them. And I said, "Toby! Toby!" But he ran off again. And the man with the diamond patterns on his socks tried to grab my shoulder, so I screamed. And then I heard the sound like sword fighting, and Toby started running again. But this time he ran the other way, which was past my feet, and I grabbed at him, and I caught him by the tail. And the man with the diamond patterns on his socks said, "Oh, Christ! Oh, Christ!" And then I heard the roaring, and I lifted Toby up and grabbed him with both hands, and he bit me on my thumb, and there was blood coming out, and I shouted, and Toby tried to jump out of my hands. And then the roaring got louder, and I turned round, and I saw the train coming out of the tunnel, and I was going to be run over and killed, so I tried to climb up onto the concrete, but it was high, and I was holding Toby in both my hands. And then the man with the diamond patterns on his socks grabbed hold of me and pulled me, and I screamed, but he kept pulling me, and he pulled me up onto the concrete, and we fell over, and I carried on screaming because he'd hurt my shoulder. And then the train came into the station, and I stood up, and I ran to the bench again, and I put Toby into the pocket inside my jacket, and he went very quiet, and he didn't move. And the man with the diamond patterns on his socks was standing next to me, and he said, "What the fuck do you think you were playing at?" But I didn't say anything. And he said, "What were you doing?" And the doors of the train opened and people got off, and there was a lady standing behind the man with the diamond patterns on his socks, and she was carrying a guitar case like Siobhan has. And I said, "I was finding Toby. He's my pet rat." And the man with the diamond patterns on his socks said, "Fucking Nora!" And the lady with the guitar case said, "Is he okay?" And the man with the diamond patterns on his socks said, "Him? Thanks a fucking bundle! Jesus Christ, a pet rat! Oh, shit, my train." And then he ran to the train, and he banged on the door, which was closed, and the train started to go away, and he said, "Fuck!" And the lady said, "Are you okay?" And she touched my arm, so I screamed again. And she said, "Okay, okay, okay." And there was a sticker on her guitar case, and it said, "Howl Records." And I was sitting on the ground, and the woman knelt down on one knee, and she said, "Is there anything I can do to help you?" And if she was a teacher at school, I could have said, "Where is 451C Chapter Road, Wilsdon, London, NW25NG? But she was a stranger, so I said, "Stand further away," because I didn't like her being so close. And I said, "I've got a Swiss Army knife, and it has a saw blade, and it could cut someone's fingers off." And she said, "Okay, buddy, I'm going to take that as a no." And she stood up and walked away. And the man with the diamond patterns on his socks said, "Mad as a fucking hatter. Jesus." And he was pressing a handkerchief against his face, and there was blood on the handkerchief. And then another train came, and the man with the diamond patterns on his socks and the lady with the guitar case got on, and it went away again. And then 8 more trains came, and I decided that I'd get onto a train, and then I'd work out what to do. So I got on the next train. And Toby tried to get out of my pocket, so I took hold of him, and I put him in my outside pocket, and I held him with my hand. And there were 11 people in the carriage, and I didn't like being in a room with 11 people in a tunnel, so I concentrated on things in the carriage. And there were signs saying, "There are 53,963 holiday cottages in Scandinavia and Germany," and "Vitabiotics," and "3435," and "Penalty, £10 if you fail to show a valid ticket for your entire journey," and "Discover gold, then bronze," and "TVIC," and "EPBIC," and "Suck my cock," and "Obstructing the doors can be dangerous," and "BRV," and "Con IC," and "Talk to the world." And there was a pattern on the walls, and there was a pattern on the seats. Then the train wobbled a lot, and I had to hang on to a rail, and we went into a tunnel, and it was noisy, and I closed my eyes, and I could feel the blood pumping in the sides of my neck. And then we came out of the tunnel, and we went into a little station, and it was called Warwick Avenue, and it said it in big letters on the wall, and I liked that, because you knew where you were. And I timed the distance between stations all the way to Willesden Junction, and all the times between stations were multiples of 15 seconds, like this. Paddington, 0. Warwick Avenue, 1 minute 30. Maida Vale, 3 minutes 15. Kilburn Park, 5 minutes. Queen's Park, 7 minutes. Kensal Green, 10 minutes 30 seconds. Willesden Junction, 11 minutes 45 seconds. And when the train stopped at Willesden Junction and the doors opened automatically, I walked out of the train. And then the doors closed and the train went away. And everyone who got off the train walked up a staircase and over a bridge, except me. And then there were only two people that I could see, and one was a man, and he was drunk, and he had brown stains on his coat, and his shoes were not a pair, and he was singing, but I couldn't hear what he was singing. And the other was an Indian man in a shop, which was a little window in a wall. And I didn't want to talk to either of them, because I was tired and hungry, and I'd already talked to lots of strangers, which is dangerous. And the more you do something dangerous, the more likely it is that something bad happens. But I didn't know how to get to 451C Chapter Road, London NW25NG, so I had to ask somebody. So I went up to the man in the little shop, and I said, "Where is 451C Chapter Road, London NW25NG? And he picked up a little book and handed it to me and said,
"295.
And the book was called London AZ Street Atlas and Index Geographers A to Z Map Company. And I opened it up, and it was lots of maps. And the man in the little shop said,
"Are you going to buy it or not?"
And I said, "I don't know." And he said,
"Well, you can get your dirty fingers off it if you don't mind."
And he took it back from me. And I said, "Where is 451C Chapter Road, London, NW25NG? And he said,
"You can either buy the A to Z or you can hop it. I'm not a walking encyclopedia."
And I said, "Is that the A to Z?" And I pointed at the book. And he said,
"No, it's a sodding crocodile."
And I said, "Is that the A to Z?" Because it wasn't a crocodile, and I thought I had heard wrongly because of his accent. And he said,
"Yes, it's the A to Z."
And I said, "Oh, that's all we need. Accent." And he said,
"Yes, it's the A to Z."
And I said, "Can I buy it?" And he didn't say anything. And I said, "Can I buy it?" And he said,
£2.95, but you're giving me the money first. I'm not having you scarpering."
And then I realized that he meant £2.95 when he said £2.95. And I paid him £2.95 with my money, and he gave me change, just like in the shop at home. And I went and sat down on the floor against the wall, like the man with the dirty clothes, but a long way away from him, and I opened up the book. And inside the front cover, there was a big map of London with places on it like Abbey Wood and Poplar and Acton and Stanmore. And it said, "Key to Map Pages." And the map was covered with a grid, and each square of the grid had two numbers on it. And Willesden was in the square which said 42 and 43. And I worked out that the numbers were the numbers of the pages where you could see a bigger scale map of that square of London. And the whole book was a big map of London, but it had been chopped up so it could be made into a book. And I liked that. But Willesden Junction wasn't on pages 42 and 43, and I found it on page 58, which was directly under page 42 on the Key to Map pages, and which joined up with page 42. And I looked round Willesden Junction in a spiral, like when I was looking for the train station in Swindon, but on the map with my finger. And the man who had the shoes that didn't match stood in front of me and said,
"Big cheese. Oh, yes. The nurses? Never. Bloody liar. Total bloody liar."
Then he went away. and it took me a long time to find Chapter Road because it wasn't on page 58. It was back on page 42, and it was in square 5C. And from the shape of the roads between Willesden Junction and Chapter Road, I devised a route. So I went up the staircase and over the bridge, and I put my ticket in the little grey gate and went into the street, and there was a bus and a big machine with a sign on it which said English, Welsh and Scottish Railways, but it was yellow. And I looked around, and it was dark, and there were lots of bright lights, and I hadn't been outside for a long time, and it made me feel sick. And I kept my eyelids very close together, and I just looked at the shape of the roads, and then I knew which roads were Station Approach and Oak Lane, which were the roads I had to go along. So I started walking. But Siobhan said I didn't have to describe everything that happened, I just have to describe the things that were interesting. So I got to 451C Chapter Road, London NW2 5NG, and it took me 27 minutes. And there was no one in when I pressed the button that said Flat C, and the only interesting thing that happened on the way was 8 men dressed up in Viking costumes, with helmets with horns on, and they were shouting, but they weren't real Vikings, because the Vikings lived nearly 2,000 years ago. And also, I had to go for another wee, and I went into the alleyway down the side of a garage called Burdett Motors, which was closed. And I didn't like doing that, but I didn't want to wet myself again. And there was nothing else interesting. So I decided to wait, and I hoped that Mother wasn't on holiday, because that would mean she could be away for more than a whole week. But I tried not to think about this, because I couldn't go back to Swindon. So I sat down on the ground behind the dustbins in the little garden that was in front of 451C Chapter Road, London NW2 5NG, and it was under a big bush. And a lady came into the garden, and she was carrying a little box with a metal grill on one end and a handle on the top, like you used to take a cat to the vet. But I couldn't see if there was a cat in it, and she had shoes with high heels, and she didn't see me. And then it started to rain, and I got wet, and I started shivering because I was cold. And then it was 11:32 p.m, and I heard voices of people walking along the street. And a voice said, "I don't care whether you thought it was funny or not." And it was a lady's voice. And another voice said, "Judy, look, I'm sorry, okay?" And it was a man's voice. And the other voice, which was the lady's voice, said, "Well, perhaps you should have thought about that before you made me look like a complete idiot." And the lady's voice was Mother's voice. And Mother came into the garden, and Mr. Shears was with her, and the other voice was his. So I stood up and said, "You weren't in, so I waited for you." And Mother said, "Christopher." And Mr. Shears said, "What?" And Mother put her arms around me and said, "Christopher, Christopher, Christopher." And I pushed her away because she was grabbing me and I didn't like it, and I pushed really hard and I fell over. And Mr. Shears said, "What the hell is going on?" And Mother said, "I'm so sorry, Christopher, I forgot." And I was lying on the ground, and Mother held up her right hand and spread her fingers out in a fan so that I could touch her fingers. But then I saw that Toby had escaped out of my pocket, so I had to catch him. And Mr. Shears said, "I suppose this means Ed's here." And there was a wall around the garden, so Toby couldn't get out because he was stuck in a corner, and he couldn't climb the walls fast enough. And I grabbed him and put him back in my pocket, and I said, "He's hungry. Have you got any food I can give him, and some water?" And Mother said, "Where's your father, Christopher?" And I said, "I think he's in Swindon." And Mr. Shears said, "Thank God for that." And Mother said, "But how did you get here?" And my teeth were clicking against each other because of the cold, and I couldn't stop them. And I said, "I came on the train, and it was really frightening, and I took Father's cash point card so I could get money out, and a policeman helped me. But then he wanted to take me back to Father, and he was on the train with me, but then he wasn't." And Mother said, "Christopher, you're soaking. Roger, don't just stand there." And then she said, "Oh, my God, Christopher, I didn't think I'd ever... Why are you here on your own?" And Mr. Shears said, "Are you going to come in, or are you going to stay out here all night?" And I said, I'm going to live with you, because Father killed Wellington with a garden fork and I'm frightened of him. And Mr. Shears said,
Jump in, Jack Christ.
And Mother said, Roger, please. Come on, Christopher. Let's go inside and get you dried off. So I stood up and I went inside the house, and Mother said, You follow Roger. And I followed Mr. Shears up the stairs, and there was a landing and a door which said Flat C, and I was scared of going inside because I didn't know what was inside. And Mother said, Go on or you'll catch your death. But I didn't know what you'll catch your death meant, and I went inside. And then she said, I'll run you a bath. And I walked round the flat to make a map of it in my head so I felt safer. And then Mother made me take my clothes off and get into the bath, and she said I could use her towel, which was purple with green flowers on the end. And she gave Toby a saucer of water and some bran flakes, and I let him run round the bathroom. And he did three little poos under the sink, and I picked them up and flushed them down the toilet, and then I got back into the bath again because it was warm and nice. Then Mother came into the bathroom, and she sat on the toilet, and she said, Are you okay, Christopher? And I said, I'm very tired. And she said, I know, love. And then she said, You're very brave. And I said, Yes. And she said, You never wrote to me. And I said, I know. And she said, Why didn't you write to me, Christopher? I wrote you all those letters. I kept thinking something dreadful had happened, or you'd move away and I'd never find out where you were. And I said, Father said you were dead. And she said, What? And I said, He said you went into hospital because you had something wrong with your heart, and then you had a heart attack and died, and he kept all the letters in a shirt box in the cupboard in his bedroom, and I found them because I was looking for a book I was writing about Wellington being killed, and he'd taken it away from me and hidden it in the shirt box. And then Mother said, Oh, my God! And then she didn't say anything for a long while, and then she made a loud wailing noise, like an animal on a nature program on television. And I didn't like her doing this because it was a loud noise, and I said, Why are you doing that? And she didn't say anything for a while. And then she said, Oh, Christopher, I'm so sorry. And I said, It's not your fault. And then she said, Bastard. The bastard. And then after a while, she said, Christopher, let me hold your hand. Just for once, just for me, will you? I won't hold it hard. And she held out her hand. And I said, I don't like people holding my hand. And she took her hand back, and she said, No. Okay, that's okay. And then she said, Let's get you out of the bath and dried off, okay? And I got out of the bath and dried myself with the purple towel. But I didn't have any pyjamas, so I put on a white T-shirt and a pair of yellow shorts, which were Mother's, but I didn't mind because I was so tired. And while I was doing this, Mother went into the kitchen and heated up some tomato soup because it was red. And then I heard someone opening the door of the flat, and there was a strange man's voice outside, so I locked the bathroom door. And there was an argument outside, and a man said, I need to speak to him. And Mother said, He's been through enough today already. And the man said, I know, but I still need to speak to him. And Mother knocked on the door and said a policeman wanted to talk to me and I had to open the door. And she said she wouldn't let him take me away, and she promised. So I picked Toby up and opened the door. And there was a policeman outside the door, and he said, Are you Christopher Boone? And I said I was. And he said, Your father says you've run away, is that right? And I said, Yes. And he said, Is this your mother? And he pointed at Mother. And I said, Yes. And he said, Why did you run away? And I said, Because Father killed Wellington, who's a dog, and I was frightened of him. And he said, So I've been told. And then he said, Do you want to go back to Swindon to your father? or do you want to stay here? And I said, I want to stay here. And he said,
And how do you feel about that?
And I said, I want to stay here. And the policeman said, Hang on, I'm asking your mother. And mother said, He told Christopher I was dead. And the policeman said,
Okay, let's not get into an argument about who said what here. I just want to know whether...
And mother said, Of course he can stay. And then the policeman said,
Well, I think that probably settles it as far as I'm concerned.
And I said, Are you going to take me back to Swindon? And he said,
No.
And then I was happy because I could live with mother. And the policeman said,
If your husband turns up and causes any trouble, just give us a ring. Otherwise, you're going to have to sort this out between yourselves.
And then the policeman went away, and I had my tomato soup. And Mr. Shears stacked up some boxes in the spare room so he could put a blow-up mattress on the floor for me to sleep on, and I went to sleep. And then I woke up, because there were people shouting in the flat, and it was 2:31 a.m. And one of the people was Father, and I was frightened. But there wasn't a lock on the door of the spare room. And Father shouted, I'm talking to her whether you like it or not, and I'm not going to be told what to do by you of all people. And Mother shouted, Roger, don't, just... And Mr. Shears shouted, I'm not being spoken to like that in my own home. And Father shouted, I'll talk to you how I damn well like. And Mother shouted, You have no right to be here. And Father shouted, No right. No right, he's my fucking son, in case you've forgotten. And Mother shouted, What in God's name did you think you were playing at, saying those things to him? And Father shouted, What was I playing at? You were the one that bloody left. And Mother shouted, So you decided to just wipe me out of his life altogether? And Mr. Shears shouted, Now let's all just calm down here, shall we? And Father shouted, Well, isn't that what you wanted? And Mother shouted, I wrote to him every week, every week. And Father shouted, Wrote to him? What the fuck use is writing to him? And Mr. Shears shouted, Whoa, whoa, whoa. And Father shouted, I cooked his meals. I cleaned his clothes. I looked after him every weekend. I looked after him when he was ill. I took him to the doctor. I worried myself sick every time he wandered off somewhere at night. I went to school every time he got into a fight. And you, what? You wrote him some fucking letters. And Mother shouted, So you thought it was okay to tell him his mother was dead? And Mr. Shears shouted, Now is not the time. And Father shouted, You butt out or I'll... And Mother shouted, Ed, for God's sake! And Father said, I'm going to see him. And if you try to stop me... And then Father came into my room. But I was holding my Swiss Army knife with the blade out in case he grabbed me. And Mother came into the room as well, and she said, It's okay, Christopher. I won't let him do anything. You're all right. And Father bent down on his knees near the bed and said, Christopher? But I didn't say anything. And he said, Christopher, I'm really, really sorry. About everything. About Wellington. About the letters. About making you run away. I never meant... I promise I will never do anything. Anything like that again, hey? Come on, kiddo. And then he held up his right hand and spread his fingers out in a fan so that I could touch his fingers, but I didn't because I was frightened. And Father said, Shit, Christopher, please! And there were tears dripping off his face, and no one said anything for a while. And then Mother said, I think you should go now. But she was talking to Father, not me. And then the policeman came back, because Mr. Shears had rung the police station, and he told Father to calm down, and he took him out of the flat. And Mother said, You go back to sleep now. Everything's going to be all right. I promise. And then I went back to sleep. Chapter 229. And when I was asleep, I had one of my favourite dreams. Sometimes I have it during the day, but then it's a daydream. But I often have it at night as well. And in the dream, nearly everyone on the earth is dead, because they've caught a virus. But it's not like a normal virus. It's like a computer virus. And people catch it because of the meaning of something an infected person says, and the meaning of what they do with their faces when they say it. Which means that people can also get it from watching an infected person on television, which means that it spreads around the world really quickly. And when people get the virus, they just sit on the sofa and do nothing, and they don't eat or drink, and so they die. But sometimes I have different versions of the dream, like when you can see two versions of a film, the ordinary one and the director's cut, like Blade Runner. And in some versions of the dream, the virus makes them crash their cars or walk into the sea and drown or jump into rivers. And I think that this version is better because then there aren't bodies of dead people everywhere. And eventually, there's no one left in the world except people who don't look at other people's faces and who don't know what the expressions on those faces mean. And these people are all special people, like me. And they like being on their own, and I hardly ever see them, because they're like okapi in the jungle, in the Congo, which are a kind of antelope, and are very shy and rare. And I can go anywhere in the world, and I know that no one's going to talk to me, or touch me, or ask me a question. But if I don't want to go anywhere, I don't have to, and I can stay at home and eat broccoli and oranges and licorice laces all the time. Or I can play computer games for a whole week, or I can just sit in the corner of the room and rub a pound coin backwards and forwards over the ripple shapes on the surface of the radiator. And I don't have to go to France. And I go out of Father's house, and I walk down the street, and it's very quiet, even though it's the middle of the day, and I can't hear any noise except birds singing and wind, and sometimes buildings falling down in the distance. And if I stand very close to traffic lights, I can hear a little click as the colours change. And I go into other people's houses and play at being a detective, and I can break the windows to get in because the people are dead and it doesn't matter. And I go into shops and take things I want, like pink biscuits or PJ's raspberry and mango smoothie or computer games or books or videos. And I take a ladder from Father's van, and I climb up onto the roof, and when I get to the edge of the roof, I put the ladder across the gap, and I climb to the next roof, because in a dream you're allowed to do anything. And then I find someone's car keys, and I get into their car, and I drive. And it doesn't matter if I bump into things, and I drive to the sea, and I park the car, and I get out, and there's rain pouring down. And I take an ice cream from a shop and eat it. And then I walk down to the beach, and the beach is covered in sand and big rocks, and there's a lighthouse on a point, but the light isn't on because the lighthouse keeper's dead. And I stand in the surf, and it comes up and over my shoes, and I don't go swimming in case there are sharks. And I stand and look at the horizon, and I take out my long metal ruler, and I hold it up against the line between the sea and the sky, and I demonstrate that the line is a curve and the earth is round. And the way the surf comes up and over my shoes and then goes down again is in a rhythm, like music or drumming. And then I get some dry clothes from the house of a family who are dead, and I go home to Father's house, except it's not Father's house anymore, it's mine. And I make myself some gobi aloo sag with red food colouring in, and some strawberry milkshake for a drink, and then I watch a video about the solar system, and I play some computer games, and I go to bed. And then the dream is finished, and I am happy. Chapter 233. The next morning, I had fried tomatoes for breakfast and a tin of green beans which Mother heated up in a saucepan. In the middle of breakfast, Mr. Shears said, OK, he can stay for a few days. And Mother said, he can stay as long as he needs to stay. And Mr. Shears said, this flat is hardly big enough for two people, let alone three. And Mother said, he can understand what you're saying, you know. And Mr. Shears said, what's he going to do? There's no school for him to go to. We've both got jobs. It's bloody ridiculous. And Mother said, Roger, that's enough. And then she made me some Red Zinger herbal tea with sugar in it, but I didn't like it. And she said, "You can stay for as long as you want to stay." And after Mr. Shears had gone to work, she made a telephone call to the office and took what's called compassionate leave, which is when someone in your family dies or is ill. Then she said we had to go and buy some clothes for me to wear, and some pyjamas and a toothbrush and a flannel. So we went out of the flat and we walked to the main road, which was Hill Lane, which was the A4088, and it was really crowded, and we caught a number 266 bus to Brent Cross Shopping Centre. Except there were too many people in John Lewis, and I was frightened, and I lay down on the floor next to the wristwatches, and I screamed, and Mother had to take me home in a taxi. Then she had to go back to the shopping centre to buy me some clothes and some pyjamas and a toothbrush and a flannel. So I stayed in the spare room while she was gone, because I didn't want to be in the same room as Mr. Shears, because I was frightened of him. And when Mother got home, she brought me a glass of strawberry milkshake and showed me my new pyjamas, and the pattern on them was 5-pointed blue stars on a purple background. And I said, "I have to go back to Swindon." And Mother said, "Christopher, you've only just got here." And I said, "I have to go back because I have to sit my maths A-level." And Mother said, "You're doing maths A-level?" And I said, "Yes, I'm taking it on Wednesday and Thursday and Friday next week." And Mother said, "God." And I said, "The Reverend Peters is going to be the invigilator." And Mother said, "I mean, that's really good." And I said, "I'm going to get an A grade, and that's why I have to go back to Swindon, except I don't want to see Father, so I have to go to Swindon with you." Then Mother put her hands over her face and breathed out hard, and she said, "I don't know whether that's going to be possible." And I said, "But I have to go." And Mother said, "Let's talk about this some other time, okay?" And I said, "Okay. But I have to go to Swindon." And she said, "Christopher, please." And I drank some of my milkshake. And later on, at 10:31 p.m, I went out onto the balcony to find out whether I could see any stars, but there weren't any because of all the clouds and what's called light pollution, which is light from street lights and car headlights and floodlights and lights in buildings reflecting off tiny particles in the atmosphere and getting in the way of light from the stars. So I went back inside. But I couldn't sleep, and I got out of bed at 2:07 a.m, and I felt scared of Mr. Shears, so I went downstairs and out of the front door into Chapter Road. And there was no one in the street, and it was quieter than it was during the day, even though you could hear traffic in the distance and sirens, so it made me feel calmer. And I walked down Chapter Road and looked at all the cars and the patterns the phone wires made against the orange clouds and the things that people had in their front gardens, like a gnome and a cooker and a tiny pond and a teddy bear. Then I heard two people coming along the road, so I crouched down between the end of a skip and a Ford Transit van, and they were talking in a language that wasn't English, but they didn't see me. And there were two tiny brass cogs in the dirty water in the gutter by my feet, like cogs from a wind-up watch. And I liked it between the skip and the Ford Transit van, so I stayed there for a long time. And I looked out at the street, and the only colours you could see were orange and black and mixtures of orange and black, and you couldn't tell what colours the cars would be during the day. And I wondered whether you could tessellate crosses, and I worked out that you could by imagining a picture in my head. And then I heard Mother's voice, and she was shouting, "Christopher! Christopher!" And she was running down the road, so I came out from between the skip and the Ford Transit van, and she ran up to me and said, "Jesus Christ!" And she stood in front of me and pointed a finger at my face and said, "If you ever do that again, I swear to God, Christopher, I love you, but I don't know what I'll do." So she made me promise never to leave the flat on my own, because it was dangerous, and because you couldn't trust people in London because they were strangers. And the next day she had to go to the shops again, and she made me promise not to answer the door if anyone rang the bell. and when she came back, she brought some food pellets for Toby and 3 Star Trek videos, and I watched them in the living room until Mr. Shears came home, and then I went into the spare room again. And I wished that 451C Chapter Road, London, NW25NG had a garden, but it didn't. And the day after that, the office where Mother worked rang and told her she couldn't come back to work because they had got someone else to do her job for her, and she was really angry, and she said that it was illegal and she was going to complain. But Mr. Shears said, "Don't be a bloody fool, it was a temporary job, for Christ's sake." And when Mother came into the spare room before I went to sleep, I said, "I have to go to Swindon to take my A-level." And she said, "Christopher, not now. I'm getting phone calls from your father threatening to take me to court. I'm getting it in the neck from Roger. It is not a good time." And I said, "But I have to go because it's been arranged and the Reverend Peters is going to invigilate." And she said, "Look, it's only an exam. I can ring the school. We can get it postponed. You can take it some other time." And I said, "I can't take it another time. It's been arranged and I've done lots of revision. And Mrs. Gascoigne said we could use a room at school." And Mother said, "Christopher, I am just about holding this together, but I am this close to losing it, all right? So just give me some..." Then she stopped talking, and she put her hand over her mouth, and she stood up and went out of the room. And I started feeling a pain in my chest like I did on the underground, because I thought I wasn't going to be able to go back to Swindon and take my A-level. And the next morning, I looked out of the window in the dining room to count the cars in the street to see whether it was going to be a quite good day or a good day or a super good day or a black day. But it wasn't like being on the bus to school, because you could look out of the window for as long as you wanted and see as many cars as you wanted. And I looked out of the window for 3 hours, and I saw 5 red cars in a row, and 4 yellow cars in a row, which meant it was both a good day and a black day, so the system didn't work anymore. But if I concentrated on counting the cars, it stopped me thinking about my A-level and the pain in my chest. And in the afternoon, Mother took me to Hampstead Heath in a taxi, and we sat on top of a hill and looked at the planes coming into Heathrow Airport in the distance. And I had a red ice lolly from an ice cream van. And Mother said she had rung Mrs. Gascoigne and told her that I was going to take my maths A-levels next year. So I threw my red ice lolly away, and I screamed for a long time, and the pain in my chest hurt so much that it was hard to breathe. And a man came up and asked if I was okay, and Mother said, "Well, what does it look like to you?" And he went away. And then I was tired from screaming, and Mother took me back to the flat in another taxi. And the next morning was Saturday, and she told Mr. Shears to go out and get me some books about science and maths from the library. And they were called 100 Number Puzzles and The Origins of the Universe and Nuclear Power. But they were for children, and they weren't very good, so I didn't read them. And Mr. Shears said, "Well, it's nice to know my contribution's appreciated." And I hadn't eaten anything since I threw away the red ice lolly on Hampstead Heath, so Mother made me a chart with stars on it, like when I was very small. And she filled a measuring jug with Complan and strawberry flavouring, and I got a bronze star for drinking 200 millilitres, and a silver star for drinking 400 millilitres, and a gold star for drinking 600 millilitres. And when Mother and Mr. Shears argued, I took the little radio from the kitchen, and I went and sat in the spare room, and I tuned it halfway between 2 stations, so that all I could hear was white noise, and I turned the volume up really loud and held it against my ear, and the sound filled my head, and it hurt so that I couldn't feel any other sort of hurt, like the hurt in my chest, and I couldn't hear Mother and Mr. Shears arguing, and I couldn't think about not doing my A-level, or the fact that there wasn't a garden at 451C Chapter Road, London, NW25NG, or the fact that I couldn't see the stars. And then it was Monday, and it was very late at night, and Mr. Shears came into my room and woke me up. And he'd been drinking beer, because he smelled like Father did when he'd been drinking beer with Rodri. And he said, "You think you're so fucking clever, don't you? Don't you ever, ever think about other people for 1 second, eh? Well, I'll bet you're really pleased with yourself now, aren't you? And then Mother came in and pulled him out of the room and said, Christopher, I'm sorry, I'm really, really sorry. The next morning, after Mr. Shears had gone to work, Mother packed lots of her clothes into two suitcases and told me to come downstairs and bring Toby and get into the car. And she put the suitcases into the boot and we drove off. But it was Mr. Shears' car, and I said, Are you stealing the car? And she said, I'm just borrowing it. And I said, Where are we going? And she said, We're going home. And I said, Do you mean home in Swindon? And she said, Yes. And I said, Is Father going to be there? And she said, Please, Christopher, don't give me any hassle right now, okay? And I said, I don't want to be with Father. And she said, Just, it's going to be all right, Christopher, okay? It's going to be all right. And I said, Are we going back to Swindon so I can do my maths A-level? And Mother said, What? And I said, I'm meant to be doing my maths A-level tomorrow. And Mother spoke very slowly, and she said, We are going back to Swindon, because if we stay in London any longer, someone was going to get hurt, and I don't necessarily mean you. And I said, What do you mean? And she said, Now I need you to be quiet for a while. And I said, How long do you want me to be quiet for? And she said, Jesus. And then she said, Half an hour, Christopher. I need you to be quiet for half an hour. And we drove all the way to Swindon, and it took 3 hours 12 minutes, and we had to stop for petrol, and Mother bought me a Milky Bar, but I didn't eat it. And we got caught in a long traffic jam, which was caused by people slowing down to look at an accident on the other carriageway. And I tried to work out a formula to determine whether a traffic jam would be caused just by people slowing down and how this was influenced by A, the density of traffic, and B, the speed of the traffic, and C, how quickly drivers braked when they saw the brake lights of the car in front coming on. But I was too tired because I hadn't slept the night before, because I was thinking about not being able to do my maths A-level. So I fell asleep. And when we got to Swindon, Mother had keys to the house, and we went in and she said, Hello! But there was no one there because it was 1:23 p.m. And I was frightened, but Mother said I'd be safe, so I went up to my room and closed the door. I took Toby out of my pocket, and I let him run around, and I played Minesweeper, and I did the expert version in 174 seconds, which was 75 seconds longer than my best time. And then it was 6:35 p.m, and I heard Father come home in his van, and I moved the bed up against the door so he couldn't get in, and he came into the house, and he and Mother shouted at each other. And Father shouted, How the fuck did you get in here? And Mother shouted, This is my house too, in case you've forgotten. And Father shouted, Is your fucking fancy man here as well? And then I picked up the bongo drums that Uncle Terry had bought me, and I knelt down in the corner of the room, and I pressed my head into the join between the two walls, and I banged the drums and I groaned and I carried on doing this for an hour, and then Mother came into the room and said Father had gone. And she said that Father had gone to stay with Rodri for a while, and we would get a place to live of our own in the next few weeks. Then I went into the garden, and I found Toby's cage behind the shed, and I brought it inside, and I cleaned it and put Toby back in it. And I asked Mother if I could do my maths A-level the next day. And she said, I'm sorry, Christopher. And I said, Can I do my maths A-level? And she said, You're not listening to me, are you, Christopher? And I said, I'm listening to you. And Mother said, I told you. I rang your headmistress. I told her you were in London. I told her you'd do it next year. And I said, But I'm here now, and I can take it. And Mother said, I'm sorry, Christopher. I was trying to do things properly. I was trying not to mess things up. And my chest began hurting again, and I folded my arms, and I rocked backwards and forwards and groaned. And Mother said, I didn't know we'd be coming back. But I carried on groaning and rocking backwards and forwards. And Mother said, come on, this isn't going to solve anything. Then she asked if I wanted to watch one of my Blue Planet videos about life under the Arctic ice or the migration of humpback whales. But I didn't say anything because I knew I wasn't going to be able to do my maths A-level. And it was like pressing your thumbnail against a radiator when it's really hot and the pain starts and it makes you want to cry. And the pain keeps hurting even when you take your thumb away from the radiator. Then Mother made me some carrots and broccoli and ketchup, but I didn't eat them. And I didn't sleep that night either. The next day, Mother drove me to school in Mr. Shear's car because we missed the bus. And when we were getting into the car, Mrs. Shears came across the road and said to Mother, you've got a fucking nerve. And Mother said, get into the car, Christopher. But I couldn't get into the car because the door was locked. And Mrs. Shears said, so, has he finally dumped you too? Then Mother opened her door and got into the car and unlocked my door and I got in and we drove away. And when we got to school, Siobhan said, so, you're Christopher's mother. And Siobhan said that she was glad to see me again and she asked if I was okay and I said I was tired. And Mother explained that I was upset because I couldn't do my maths A-level, so I hadn't been eating properly or sleeping properly. And then Mother went away, and I drew a picture of a bus using perspective so that I didn't think about the pain in my chest. And after lunch, Siobhan said that she had spoken to Mrs. Gascoigne, and she still had my A-level papers in 3 sealed envelopes in her desk. So I asked if I could still do my A-level, and Siobhan said, I think so. We're going to ring the Reverend Peters this afternoon and make sure he can still come in and be your invigilator. And Mrs. Gascoigne is going to write a letter to the examination board to say that you're going to take the exam after all. And hopefully they'll say that that's okay. But we can't know that for sure. Then she stopped talking for a few seconds. I thought I should tell you now, so you could think about it. And I said, so I could think about what? And she said, is this what you want to do, Christopher? And I thought about the question, and I wasn't sure what the answer was, because I wanted to do my maths A-level, but I was very tired. And when I tried to think about maths, my brain didn't work properly. And when I tried to remember certain facts, like the logarithmic formula for the approximate number of prime numbers not greater than x, I couldn't remember them. And this made me frightened. And Siobhan said, you don't have to do it, Christopher. If you say you don't want to do it, no one's going to be angry with you. And it won't be wrong or illegal or stupid. It will just be what you want, and that will be fine. And I said, I want to do it. Because I don't like it when I put things in my timetable and I have to take them out again, because when I do that, it makes me feel sick. And Siobhan said, okay. And she rang the Reverend Peters, and he came into school at 3:27 p.m., and he said, so, young man, are we ready to roll? And I did paper one of my maths A-level, sitting in the art room. And Reverend Peters was the invigilator, and he sat at a desk while I did the exam, and he read a book called The Cost of Discipleship by Dietrich Bonhoeffer, and ate a sandwich. And in the middle of the exam, he went and smoked a cigarette outside the window, but he watched me through the window in case I cheated. And when I opened the paper and read through it, I couldn't think how to answer any of the questions, and also I couldn't breathe properly. And I wanted to hit somebody or stab them with my Swiss Army knife, but there wasn't anyone to hit or stab with my Swiss Army knife except the Reverend Peters, and he was very tall. And if I hit him or stabbed him with my Swiss Army knife, he wouldn't be my invigilator for the rest of the exam. So I took deep breaths, like Siobhan said I should do when I want to hit someone in school, and I counted 50 breaths and did cubes of the cardinal numbers as I counted, like this. 1, 8, 27... etc. And that made me feel a little calmer. but the exam was 2 hours long, and 20 minutes had already gone, so I had to work really fast, and I didn't have time to check my answers properly. And that night, just after I got home, Father came back to the house, and I screamed, but Mother said she wouldn't let anything bad happen to me, and I went into the garden and lay down and looked at the stars in the sky and made myself negligible. And when Father came out of the house, he looked at me for a long time, and then he punched the fence and made a hole in it and went away. And I slept a little bit that night because I was doing my maths A-level, and I had some spinach soup for supper. And the next day I did paper 2, and the Reverend Peters read The Cost of Discipleship by Dietrich Bonhoeffer, but this time he didn't smoke a cigarette, and Siobhan made me go into the toilets before the exam and sit on my own and do breathing and counting. And I was playing The 11th Hour on my computer that evening when a taxi stopped outside the house. Mr. Shears was in the taxi, and he got out of the taxi and threw a big cardboard box of things belonging to Mother onto the lawn. And they were a hairdryer, and some knickers, and some L'Oreal shampoo, and a box of muesli, and 2 books, Diana, Her True Story by Andrew Morton, and Rivals by Jilly Cooper, and a photograph of me in a silver frame. And the glass in the photograph frame broke when it fell onto the grass. Then he got some keys out of his pocket, and got into his car and drove away. And Mother ran out of the house, and she ran into the street and shouted, "Don't fucking bother coming back either!" And she threw the box of muesli, and it hit the boot of his car as he drove away, and Mrs. Shears was looking out of her window when Mother did this. The next day I did paper 3, and the Reverend Peters read the Daily Mail and smoked 3 cigarettes. And this was my favourite question. Prove the following result. A triangle with sides that can be written in the form n squared plus 1, n squared minus 1, and 2n, where n is greater than 1, is right-angled. Show, by means of a counterexample, that the converse is false. And I was going to write out how I answered the question, except Siobhan said that it wasn't very interesting, but I said it was. And she said people wouldn't want to read the answers to a maths question in a book, and she said I could put the answer in an appendix, which is an extra chapter at the end of a book, which people can read if they want to. And then my chest didn't hurt so much, and it was easier to breathe. But I still felt sick because I didn't know if I'd done well in the exam, and because I didn't know if the examination board would allow my paper to be considered after Mrs. Gascoigne had told them I wasn't going to take it. And it's best if you know a good thing is going to happen, like an eclipse or getting a microscope for Christmas. And it's bad if you know a bad thing is going to happen, like having a filling or going to France. But I think it's worse if you don't know whether it's a good thing or a bad thing which is going to happen. And Father came round to the house that night, and I was sitting on the sofa watching University Challenge and just answering the science questions. And he stood in the doorway of the living room, and he said, "Don't scream, okay, Christopher? I'm not going to hurt you." And Mother was standing behind him, so I didn't scream. Then he came a bit closer to me, and he crouched down like you do with dogs to show that you're not an aggressor, and he said, "I wanted to ask you how the exam went, but I didn't say anything." And Mother said, "Tell him, Christopher." But I still didn't say anything. And Mother said, "Please, Christopher." So I said, "I don't know if I got all the questions right, because I was really tired and I hadn't eaten any food, so I couldn't think properly." And then Father nodded, and he didn't say anything for a short while. Then he said, "Thank you." And I said, "What for?" And he said, "Just thank you." Then he said, "I'm very proud of you, Christopher. Very proud. I'm sure you did really well." And then he went away, and I watched the rest of University Challenge. And the next week, Father told Mother she had to move out of the house, but she couldn't because she didn't have any money to pay rent for a flat. And I asked if Father would be arrested and go to prison for killing Wellington, because we could live in the house if he was in prison. But Mother said the police would only arrest Father if Mrs. Shears did what's called pressing charges, which is telling the police you want them to arrest someone for a crime, because the people don't arrest people for little crimes unless you ask them, and Mother said that killing a dog was only a little crime. But then everything was okay, because Mother got a job on the till in a garden centre, and the doctor gave her pills to take every morning to stop her feeling sad, except that sometimes they made her dizzy and she fell over if she stood up too fast. So we moved into a room in a big house that was made of red bricks, and the bed was in the same room as the kitchen, and I didn't like it because it was small and the corridor was painted brown and there was a toilet and a bathroom that other people used, and Mother had to clean it before I used it or I wouldn't use it, and sometimes I wet myself because other people were in the bathroom. And the corridor outside the room smelled like gravy and the bleach they used to clean the toilets at school. And inside the room it smelled like socks and pine air freshener. And I didn't like waiting to find out about my maths A-level. And whenever I thought about the future, I couldn't see anything clearly in my head, and that made a panic start. So Siobhan said I shouldn't think about the future. She said, just think about today. Think about things that have happened, especially about good things that have happened. And one of the good things was that Mother bought me a wooden puzzle. And you had to detach the top part of the puzzle from the bottom part, and it was really difficult. And another good thing was that I helped Mother paint her room white with a hint of wheat, except I got paint in my hair. And she wanted to wash it out by rubbing shampoo on my head when I was in the bath, but I wouldn't let her. So there was paint in my hair for 5 days, and then I cut it out with a pair of scissors. But there were more bad things than good things. And one of them was that Mother didn't get back from work till 5:30 p.m., so I had to go to Father's house between 3:49 p.m. and 5:30 p.m., because I wasn't allowed to be on my own, and Mother said I didn't have a choice, so I pushed the bed against the door in case Father tried to come in. And sometimes he tried to talk to me through the door, but I didn't answer him. And sometimes I heard him sitting on the floor outside the door quietly for a long time. And another bad thing was that Toby died, because he was 2 years and 7 months, which is very old for a rat, and I said I wanted to bury him, but Mother didn't have a garden, so I buried him in a big plastic pot of earth, like a pot you put a plant in. And I said I wanted another rat, but Mother said I couldn't have one, because the room was too small. And I solved the puzzle, because I worked out that there were 2 bolts inside the puzzle and there were 2 tunnels with metal rods in. And you had to hold the puzzle so that both rods slid to the end of their tunnels and they weren't crossing the intersection between the 2 pieces of the puzzle, and then you could pull them apart. And Mother picked me up from Father's house one day after she had finished work, and Father said, "Christopher, can I have a talk with you?" And I said, "No." And Mother said, "It's okay, I'll be here." And I said, "I don't want to talk to Father." And Father said, "I'll do you a deal." And he was holding the kitchen timer, which is a big plastic tomato sliced through the middle, and he twisted it and it started ticking. And he said, "5 minutes, okay? That's all. Then you can go." So I sat on the sofa and he sat on the armchair and Mother was in the hallway, and Father said, "Christopher, look, things can't go on like this. I don't know about you, but this just hurts too much. You being in the house but refusing to talk to me. You have to learn to trust me, and I don't care how long it takes. If it's 1 minute one day, and 2 minutes the next, and 3 minutes the next, and it takes years, I don't care. Because this is important. This is more important than anything else." And then he tore a little strip of skin away from the side of the thumbnail on his left hand. And he said, let's call it a project. A project we have to do together. You have to spend more time with me. And I have to show you that you can trust me. And it'll be difficult at first because it's a difficult project. But it'll get better. I promise." Then he rubbed the sides of his forehead with his fingertips, and he said, You don't have to say anything, not right now. You just have to think about it. And, I've got your present to show you that I really mean what I say. And to say sorry. And because, well, you'll see what I mean. Then he got out of the armchair and he walked over to the kitchen door.